That's going to take care of things for me for today. I hope you enjoyed today's show. So until next week, ladies and gentlemen, friends and neighbors, be good to yourselves and to each other. Remember, we do love you madly. Until next week, so long.
Magnetic Fields, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Under a blue and white beach umbrella, sitting pretty, waiting on a fellow. I'm fairly sure he's no show, no show. So I pack up my things and trudge home, clasp in my clutch. Avenues I know, every tram casting every shadow. Don't know why I'm singing this song with tears in my eyes. I'm sure you've got my number, suppose I'm saving my surprise for when you call. This night won't matter at all. And just because my heart can take it does not mean you should go out of your way to break it. Oh. The gate I wait. wait 'neath the marquee that partly reads, from here to eternity, which is about how long I've been waiting, waiting. It's possible that you were asked to work late, the subway stalled, or you took down the wrong day to a fault. I didn't always have faith, have faith. Suppose I'll head in and stare blankly at the movie screen, and afterwards when I took myself out for a scream, is when I saw you with someone else. That was the last straw. Tell me, baby, why'd you go and let me down again? Just because my heart can take it does not mean you should go out of your way to break it. Now you've got me crying again. Oh.
Hello, you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. That was Gigi from their album Maintenant, the song The Marquee featuring Katie Eastburn of Young People. That's the new Nick Hergovich project, and look for an interview with Gigi on an upcoming episode of Dunkin' Donuts, also in the March issue of Discorder. I interviewed Nick the other night. It was pretty fun. On today's show, we have an interview with Jonna and Claire of Yacht. That's going to take up most of the second half of the show. But first, we're going to play a couple of girl groups, kind of in the same vein as Gigi. We're going to have Vivian Girls. They have a song called He's Gone, which is a cover of the Chantels song. It's kind of a girl groupy kind of thing. I like it. And after that, we're going to hear some Best Coast. The two of them are going to be playing at the Biltmore this Friday. So if you like what you hear, go check it out. Here we go.
God. I must have done something wrong. CITR has tons of friends. Because with your Friends of CITR card, you get rad discounts from local businesses. Say Commercial Drive is your home sweet hipster home. Then present your Friends card at Bone Rattle Music, Audiophile, People's Co-op Bookstore, High Life Records, and Spank Clothing. And you'll receive awesome discounts. So become a CITR member, get a free Friends card, and feel the love.
On the sunny west coast of the nation, this is Kid Koala, and you're listening to CITR in Vancouver on 101.9 FM.
The freshest acts in electronic entertainment are coming to Code Live. 3 weekends, 8 shows in Vancouver's newest multimedia concert space. Friday, February 12th, celebrated DJ Kid Koala brings a special turntable cabaret show to the Center for Digital Media, 3 blocks east of the Main Street Science World SkyTrain station. Montreal's Kid Koala, tickets $22. Call 1-800-TICKETS or tickets.com. Code, it's the Cultural Olympiad's digital edition. For more info, visit vancouver2010.com/CODE.
The world.
That was Best Coast with their song When I'm With You, and at the top we heard Vivian Girls. Coming up next, we're going to hear a couple of bands from San Francisco. Lots of great stuff coming out of the Bay Area right now. And there's a new compilation out called In a Cloud, New Sounds from San Francisco. So we're going to hear a song off of that compilation. Sunny and the Sunsets is the name of the band, and the song is called Heart of Sadness. And after that, we're going to hear some Fresh and Onlys. You may know them. I guess one of their other bands is called The Sandwiches. I've played them a few times. And this is the song Second One to Know. So let's give those a listen. Nice stuff. That was the Fresh and Onlys from San Francisco, California, with their song Second One to Know. Upcoming shows tonight, John Veese is playing with Lasse Marhog, The Rita, and Sex Negatives at Roy G. Biv. Tomorrow night, Vivian Girls are playing with Best Coast at the Biltmore. Ra Ra is playing with Like Animals Again and Pineapple at the Railway. On Saturday night, Muscles is playing with Beelines at the Astoria. And on the 18th, Bell Orchestra is playing with Brassenot and Certain Breeds at the Great Northern Way campus of UBC and other places. Looking ahead later on after next week, Yacht is playing with Bobby Birdman and Fine Mist at the Biltmore. Woodhands are playing the next night with Topless Gay Love Techno Party at the Biltmore. That's an early show. Chain and the Gang are playing March 5th at the Media Club with the Strange Boys and Cosmetics. And Pierced Arrows are playing April 3rd with Lullaby Orchestra at the Biltmore. So, you are listening to Dunkin' Donuts here on CITR 101.9 FM. Next up, we have an extended interview with Yacht, who are going to be here next week. And so what you're going to hear is Jonna and Claire from the band. But up front, up first, we're going to hear one of their songs from their latest album, See the Mystery Lights. Here we go.
I told you your dreams would come true. longer than we've been at home in maybe 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
So it's pretty surreal, and it's been really nice.
Yeah. You guys have, I mean, you guys have been touring forever, it seems.
Yes. Yeah.
So where were some of the, like, and you went all over the place in 2009. You were on how many continents? Four?
Ooh, I don't know. More than that.
Okay.
Let's just say that. More than that. I was going to say, I think we were in 17 countries last year. Is that what we came up with?
Something like that. I can't remember the exact specs.
Yeah.
But it was a lot.
And coming up next, you guys are going to be playing a show in Portland and then coming up and doing a tour of Western Canada.
Yeah, even before that, too, we're flying out for one college show in upstate New York.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool. Why Western Canada? Why did you want to do a tour leg through there?
Well, we wanted to be in Canada. We wanted to come to Canada for a long time. It just hasn't happened for us. And, yeah, this just made perfect sense.
Cool.
We've been asking our agent to bring us to Canada for a long time, and then finally, yeah, people asked us, and we have a policy of saying yes to playing shows.
Awesome.
So, yeah, we're huge fans of Canada. And this has just been the earliest that we could come up.
Cool.
And it's totally long overdue.
Yeah, definitely. You guys do know you're coming during the Olympics here.
Yeah, we know.
That part is strange for us.
Yeah.
That was maybe not the wisest scheduling, although it'll be kind of exciting to be in Vancouver during all of the Olympic madness.
It'll
make us feel like it's a big, exciting moment in time that we're part of, which we always like to do.
It'll be a little ray of sunshine for all the Vancouverites, I think, because a lot of us are feeling kind of bummed out about all the craziness that's going to be happening.
Yeah. We are going for the gold. Just to make that perfectly clear, we're going for the gold.
Awesome.
I'll settle for silver, to be honest.
And you guys have added some members for this part of the tour?
Yes, we have.
For this
whole North American tour, yes.
Right. So tell me about the Straight Gays. Who are they, and what's up with that?
They are close friends of ours. Actually, we have some sad news. One of our members was just recently diagnosed with mono and spinal meningitis at the same time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Luckily, he's okay. He's doing well, but we don't know if he'll be able to tour with us now.
Right.
So aside from him, that's Dee Ruben Snyder, who is part of this amazing performance collective called Rob Walmart. Then we have Bobby Birdman, who's been a friend for a very long time and an amazing musician, and he has a new album called New Moods that is really awesome, one of our favorite records of 2009.
Rad.
And then Jeffrey Brodsky, who has a band called Jeffrey Jerusalem, who makes wigged out dance music that's really great. So yeah, they're close friends that we've been fans of their own music and wanted to incorporate them into Yacht and see what would happen.
Cool.
See how it would play out. Yeah, every 6 months or so, we get crazy, and we have to change Yacht in some major way. And in the past changes and revisions have been adding Claire, making all kinds of performance rules, like never touching the computer, or only touching the computer, or touching audience members, or invading personal space, using PowerPoint, focusing a lot on video of the show and interaction with people. But yeah. We have to make major changes or else we go nuts.
And for those of Yacht fans who are familiar with you kind of as a solo artist or with Claire, what will it look like with more people on stage? Have you set any rules yet for what it's going to look like on this tour?
There are a lot of rules that I don't think we want to
You don't want to spill the beans.
Yeah. We can know that it's going to look very elegant.
All right.
I can really tell you. Yeah, there will be an air of elegance on stage. It'll be an elegant mood, an elegant tone.
Excellent.
I don't know if you've ever seen a chandelier with real candles. But imagine that.
Wow.
No, we're not bringing one.
It's going to be a lot of like scented candles and roses, sort of like an MTV Unplugged sort of style.
Yeah.
A draped curtain in the background with a nice like old wooden chair that John will be sitting in.
Real soft lighting.
One nice glass of champagne.
Nice.
On a table, a long-stemmed glass.
Well, and there's a local band called Fine Mist that's opening for you guys. I think they're Megan and Jay, who are maybe some old friends of yours.
Yes, they are. Yeah, we're excited to see them. We haven't seen them in a while.
Yeah, and they're local favorites here, so I think there's lots of reasons for people
to see them. That's what I've heard, yeah.
Hometown heroes. That's exciting.
And they have an elegant mood, too. They are always drinking white wine, and they have lots of candles on stage.
Well, that's why we chose them. We set an order to them, as we said.
Yep. One thing about your tours that kind of sets you apart is the amazing tour documentation that you do. And really, your website in general is exhaustive in your documentation of what you're doing. Is there a place where that came from, or what has inspired you to be so diligent with keeping up with the documentation?
I think it started with just having a pretty bad memory and wanting to reference it just as a resource for myself.
Yeah.
So I could go back and be like, oh, what's that ice cream place in San Diego that I really like? And then having that hard document that I could always reference. But also just, yeah, it came out of just, I don't know, maybe sheer boredom or just really wanting to always keep up with not just playing music, but with doing everything else. We consider ourselves generalists.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we see Yacht as being a kind of evolutionary entity, if you will, and in the evolutionary history of animal and humankind, over-specialization is what causes extinction, and we don't want to go extinct. We want to stay away from being over-specialized and only sort of tunnel-visioning on our music or our performance. Instead, we try to do all kinds of different projects, video, photography. Documentation is a big part of it because it's a way for us to flex those muscles as much as possible. So we do all kinds of stuff, and we feel like it keeps us connected to the world around us and allows us to sort of like be a relevant piece of culture as opposed to just a sort of niche thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also we just do so much stuff every year that it's difficult for us to keep tabs on it all unless we fervently document and archive it all. And so we can look back on it in our old years on our rocking chairs and see where we were and when.
Yeah, and I think it came also just from being fans of that kind of documentation, like the movie 1991, The Year Punk Broke. It's a Sonic Youth and Nirvana tour documentary that I saw at an early age and really, really, really loved. So I think I've just been trying to recreate that movie my entire life.
And do you do all the web design yourself and like all the video editing and all that stuff?
Yeah, we do almost everything all ourselves. We're control freaks.
Well, it looks fantastic. I wanted to ask you about your mission statement. How did that come about?
Well, there's lots of reasons for it. Mainly, it's we try to build as much community as possible around Yacht and our peripheral activities. We think that there is a kind of a semblance of community that happens with bands, but it's usually sort of based on like I kind of idol worship or fan worship. We want our fan base and our little micro world to be much more collaborative and welcoming than that, and so we try to bolster a feeling of interactive community and the ability that people can sort of help us codify our belief system and our ideology and our ideas. We make a point of talking to people about our various projects as much as possible and shaping it to their ideas and needs. And I think that people are a little bit hesitant to take part in something like that unless there's sort of a codified set of beliefs, the foundation, if you will. I think it helps people sort of understand that what they are taking part in is something that perhaps is something that is in tune with their beliefs or has a belief system that is real and codified, if that makes sense. I mean, it's kind of like how it's like the Ten Commandments, if you will. Like, people like having that foundation to build on. And then it's like, but it's not set in stone.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We live on the internet, so it's not set in stone. It's a living document that can breathe and change, and that's something that we're really excited about, especially like going to places like Canada or to places we haven't been often or haven't ever been.
Mm-hmm.
We want to meet new people and hear new ideas and change documents based on that.
Yeah, but it's important to us to present sort of what we think are like the starting beliefs of Yacht, and then we can have conversations with people that are based on something instead of just, you know, grasping at straws.
Mm-hmm. And the name Yacht, I'm not sure about where it comes from, but it seems to go against somewhat the egalitarian-ness of of your mission statement. So, like, yachts are elitist and bourgeois. So where did the name Yacht come from, and how does it play against the sort of what you're trying to achieve with your mission statement?
Yacht is actually an acronym.
It has nothing to do with luxury or the image of the boat or anything at all.
Okay.
It doesn't reference that yacht at all.
Okay.
It's an acronym for Young Americans Challenging High Technology.
Ah.
It's named after this after-school program that Johnny used to go to.
Yeah, when I was 12 or 13 years old in Portland, Oregon, there was this after-school, I guess it's a program, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was I think that's where we started to become obsessed with duality, too, because they broke the class into two groups every day, and it was really strange, and it was ultimately shut down due to some kind of administration suspicion. There was some, it's a little vague what actually happens to the building and the program, but yeah, there's a building called YACHT, Young Americans Challenging High Technology, and the two groups, one group would embrace technology and use technology as a tool to create. The other group would sort of hate technology, almost in a Timothy McVeigh, like, Unabomber style, where they were very anti-technology and were trying to figure out ways to destroy technology in, like, this productive, like, you know, eighth grade sort of level way. And then halfway through each day of this four-hour program, the two groups would switch. So I think this really caused a lot of emotional problems with the teenagers, including myself. But yeah, I think that was also where I really started to be deeply interested in mystery. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of mystery surrounding that building and that program and those people running it. So, yeah, YACHT is a reference to that.
Okay.
It is a little bit, you know, I know it's a little bit strange that it, you know, that the word itself is, connotes luxury in such an intense way, because we really work hard to not have an image, of course. But at the same time, I think it's kind of an interesting limitation and restriction where we constantly have to overcome the fact that our name is YACHT, and we have, like, this built-in duality.
To our very name.
Yeah.
We're into the fight. We really want to fight everything.
Except flame wars. No flame wars.
Not that fight.
That fight was okay, too. I think that that fight was ultimately productive.
Right. One thing that I really liked that you did a few years ago was you released a whole bunch of your music under Creative Commons license, the instrumentals. And I noticed that you still have freeloads on your website. What was the inspiration for making those available under a Creative Commons license?
I just thought about how I relate to music and how I want to download music and how I like hearing instrumental versions of other bands. But, you know, why the hell not? I should release them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's these kind of, like, super draconian enforcements that are happening these days on YouTube and where kids are getting in trouble for using, you know, like, using any kind of recorded music in the backgrounds of their confessional YouTube videos, and record labels are coming down and, like, taking their videos down. And I think that's such a counterproductive way of dealing with music and talking about music and partaking in the community of music. We just want people to be able to use our music for whatever purpose they want without ever having to fear that something, like, terrible is going to happen to their creative output.
Yes, it's as extreme as people will be, like, recording something in a cafe and there will be music playing in the background, like, inside of the cafe, and then a record label will take down that video clip because that music is copywritten. You know, it's ridiculous. It's really crazy.
Yeah.
We don't really feel ownership over our music once it's out there.
Yeah, totally. We feel like once you make a piece of art or a piece of music and you put it out into the world, you sort of have to relinquish any kind of authorship or real ownership of it, because it becomes part of the greater cultural world, and everybody has a point of view and a perspective, and everybody owns a little bit of it, and you have to let them use it the way they want to use it. Like, you can't hold on to your music in that way, because it's isolationist.
At least we can't.
Others can and should.
Yeah, and what would you say to musicians who say that they want to, they have a livelihood and they want to enforce their copyrights over their music? What would be the response that you have? Because clearly you are, you know, you're the authors of these work, but you're relinquishing those rights.
Well, I think there's no one way. There's no right way. There's no wrong way. This is just the way we believe.
Yeah, I mean, musicians make their money in all kinds of different ways. Some people don't make any money off selling records, even, you know, in a pre-internet downloading age, and only make money on touring. And some people make money selling songs to movies and commercials. And it's just, you choose the way that you want to monetize your enterprise and how much you want to monetize your enterprise. It is a livelihood for us as it is for everyone else. And we try to be honest about that. We call ourselves a business up front. But we also know that we live in a very complicated world and where the rules are changing quite rapidly. And we don't want to be reactionary. We don't want to be Luddites. And we don't want to be, we don't want to hold on to an old model that doesn't work and risk losing our involvement with the world around us. I mean, kind of in key with the generalist thing. Like, we want to be part of the world, not fighting against it.
And we're very lucky because we have the attitude of doing as much as we can with as little as possible. So we don't have a budget for recording albums. We don't use a studio. We don't use professional instruments. We use whatever we can get off Craigslist. We have one condenser microphone that we record everything with, and we use a consumer-level iMac computer to do everything.
Yeah.
And I
know overhead is
overhead is really low.
It's zero, and there's two of us.
Right. Yeah.
There's Except no. For us, like you know, financial fitness is $100.
Right.
We've made it.
Do you and do you get I noticed there's a donation page or a button on your website. Do people donate?
Yeah.
If they download.
Shockingly, yes.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah, I think that just we wanted to offer people a way to contribute monetarily into the culture of the band, because we offer a lot of stuff for free that we wanted people to be able to have the choice if they wanted to give us money, which is weird and funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that we count on financially. No. It's always kind of funny and a point of conversation when someone actually does donate. Like, oh, this guy donated money. Who's this guy?
Yeah, and then we'd like to develop, you know, real relationships with those people who donate because we feel like they're buying into something and we want to give them something in return.
Because that's what buying music, I mean, that's what buying records is about. People buy CDs in order to buy into the culture of a band, you know, or they buy a CD at the merch table because they want to talk to the band. It's not so much about owning the thing or paying for the thing as it is being part of it. So for us, the donation is kind of like a shorthand for that. If people are uncomfortable being part of the culture without having a monetary exchange, then they can do that if they want to.
Yeah.
We just want to explore and give all options and all possibilities.
Yeah, no, that's great. Speaking of business, are you guys still running Airmail?
Yes.
I remember when you guys first launched that, it was a major logistical headache. Have you ironed out all the hiccups?
Since then, we've acquired some friends who are, we didn't acquire these friends. We had friends that offered to help us run everything, so that's been really awesome. Now we're partnered with our friends.
Yeah, we're pretty hands-off about it at this point. It sort of runs itself, but it was a total nightmare for a really long time.
We had never meant for it to be a legitimate business.
Right.
We thought that we would, you know, we would make 100 of the things by hand, and that would be the end of it.
Right.
But it was, every single, like, tech blog, computer blog, covered.
It was huge. I remember.
So overwhelming. So crazy for us.
Yeah.
We had never, ever, ever thought that we would have to get a business license or file for a patent or any of that kind of stuff before. Because although we say Yacht is a business, it's very a shabbily run business.
Yeah, it's pretty poorly run.
So no follow-up with the iPad? No idea for merchandising with the iPad?
We're working on something, but it's a secret.
Okay, all right. You get to the patent office first.
We'll be right back.
So I heard that you recorded this album in Marfa.
Yes.
Why did you choose Marfa to record this album?
Well, Marfa kind of chose us, I think. I mean,
okay.
Marfa has this phenomenon that is not unknown in other parts of the world, but it's quite rare. It's a mystery light phenomenon that happens, and it's been going on in that part of the West Texas desert for as long as there have been people to record it, and certainly before that. It's a paranormal optical phenomenon that happens. It's called the Marfa Mystery Lights, and every night you can go out into the desert and see these paranormal, unexplained light happenings. And it's something that is that we discovered sort of haphazardly in our travels across America, and it profoundly spoke to us as being a very rare example of a modern mystery, because we live in an age where, you know, there isn't very much mystery left. We live in a very scientific age where even the most tiny and incomprehensibly small workings of this physical universe have been more or less rationalized and explained with profound and mathematical theories, and where you know, we have access to information that would have taken our parents, you know, weeks and or decades to find. We have at our fingertips. So, you know, us as sort of self-navigating net native people, we really had never experienced a real mystery. We'd never felt like something was both unqualifiably real and unknowable and mysterious. And so the first time we saw the lights, it really had a huge effect on us, and we decided we wanted to go back to Marfa to live and to know what it was like to live with that phenomenon day to day, what it was like to live with mystery, because that's the way the human race operated for centuries, that, you know, most of the natural phenomena in the world were unknown, mysterious, capricious things that people had no idea what they were. They, you know, people would rationalize it as being a spiritual or godly event or a fateful event, but not necessarily something that we could ever understand. And we've sort of lost touch with that, I think. And it was important for us to go back and try to reconnect with that ancient human aesthetic culture of being like a lost little speck of dust hanging in a vast, cavernous, unexplained universe, you know?
Yeah.
We hadn't intended on making an album of music. We just intended on living there and meeting everyone we could in the town,
right,
and finding out what their story was and how they relate to the lights and how they deal with the lights. And later we just found an album before us. We didn't know how it got there or how it was made, but apparently we made it.
Well, and Marfa has a great arts community as well.
Yeah, that's the other incredible thing about Marfa, is that it has an internationally recognized and priceless art community and some incredible site-specific works by some timeless and legendary American artists.
Do you guys still feel, between recording the album in Marfa and being on the road so much, do you still feel, or at least Jonah, do you still feel a strong affinity with Portland?
Yes and no. I feel closer to Marfa almost, and I know that Marfa will be a place that we'll return to our whole lives. I think that right now one of our major goals as a band is to try to set up shop in Marfa, some kind of shop that could be like a community space where people could come and gather. But, I mean, all of our friends live in Portland, so we have...
And they both grew up here, so...
We have a huge connection to Oregon and to Portland specifically.
But...
It's hard to know. I mean, we're kind of like temporary autonomous zones that walk around, and everywhere we go has to be, by virtue of the necessity of our lives, has to be home to us. Otherwise, we would be totally adrift and alienated all the time. So Portland is home for us in a more profound way than other places, but the world is kind of home to us, too.
Is that one of the reasons that you were up? Or why did you sign with DFA? What was about DFA? You were the first North... Northwest
they
band.
Asked us, and we,
okay.
You know, we went back to our policy of saying yes.
Yeah.
We've always prided ourselves in only working with record labels that we have close personal friendships with.
Right.
And that started with our best friend Steve and his label States Rights Records, then our incredibly great friend Curtis Knapp and his label Marriage Records. And I had been in email touch with DFA just about remixes and remixing, and nothing formal or nothing super personal. Then I just got a phone call from John Galkin at DFA who essentially runs it single-handedly, and just asked me, hey, what are you doing tomorrow? Do you want to go on tour with LCD Sound System? And I had been a fan, but never had met any of those people, and I was a little suspicious just because, you know, they're fancy New Yorkers, and they played on David Letterman, and I was like, oh, no, are they going to be, like, smarmy assholes? What is this going to be like?
Well, and wasn't MIA on that tour as well?
What's that?
Wasn't MIA on that tour as well?
No.
That was a different one? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. It was supposed to be Prince Horn Dance School, but they weren't granted UK or American visas. But
oh, okay.
Yeah, so I filled in at the very last minute, and it turned out that everyone even remotely involved with DFA happens to be giant sweethearts. So, yeah, after meeting John Galkin in person and James, it turned out that while DFA seems like this international mega corporation or something, it works exactly the same way that marriage and states' rights works, where mm-hmm. it's just one or two people doing everything day to day. And so, yeah, it just made sense for us, and it stopped being overwhelming and stopped being scary. And we said yes. Even after that tour, we were friends and it was great and everything, but I had never expected that they would want an album from us.
Mm-hmm.
But they asked for one, and so we gave it to them. And actually, the first thing that we gave them, the first version of Sea Mystery Lights was only 8.5 minutes long. It was 10 tracks of mantras. Sort of all of the songs now, as they exist, sort of boiled down to their core message. And sometimes they were atonal, sometimes they were just spoken, sometimes they were melodic. But it was a very different record. And after DFA agreed to put it out, we stepped back and we pondered, like, is this what we really want to give to the world through this golden key vehicle of DFA, or do we want to make something else that's less beating people over the head with these mantras and more subversive or more subliminal or something? So we started talking about writing pop songs around these core messages, because pop music is such a great vehicle for disseminating messages, because it's so repetitive and people listen to pop songs 100 times without knowing what the words are about or what they mean.
True.
Even after they've, you know, memorized them. And on the dance side of pop music, it's like there's so many mantras already built into that stuff, and it can be even more repetitive and more rhythmic and whatever. So it just made perfect sense for us to do that, and then it just happened.
Yeah. Well, great. I think that's about it. Anything else you'd like to add?
We're excited to see you, Canada.
Yeah, very excited.
Thank you for having us.
Is Hastings Street still scary?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's not scary in the sense that you should be worried about your personal safety when you go down there, but it's scary just in terms of the just how awful things can get for people, I think, how harrowing it is. I'd mm-hmm. be much more scared of Granville Street, which is kind of where all the bars are that... let out, and
right.
then like fist fights break out and stuff like that. Hastings Street, people will leave you alone, but you just there's a lot of pain. And,
yeah.
But then the Olympics are coming, and I don't know what kind of whitewashing is going to be happening. They might
that's interesting.
Be locking everyone up.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
well, see you soon.
You can't live any way you want. You can't live any way you want. very important. I forgot to tell you. What? Don't cross the street.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
This is a call out to the freaks, nerds, and geeks.
I am become death, the destroyer of worlds.
Put down your Dungeon Master's Guide and get ready for an hour of punk, metal, and garage rock.
Good afternoon. I am a HAL 9000 completely.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all.
We all fall down on 101.9 FM CITR in Vancouver.
You can see it when you look out your window, or when you turn on your television.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Yacht. It was a lot of fun to speak to them, and I'm glad for their time. And they are at the Biltmore on February 19th. I'd like to remind you that Dunkin' Donuts is brought to you by the Biltmore Cabaret. Upcoming attractions include February 11th, POS, February 12th, tomorrow night, Vivian Girls. On Saturday, the Late Show is Makeout Videotape. And on February 16th, Justin Towns Earl will be playing. That's the Biltmore Cabaret at 2755 Prince Edward in the heart of historic Mount Pleasant. Check out biltmorecabaret.com for more information. All right, that's going to do it. If you like what you heard, check out the podcast at citr.ca. You can also check out what I played at dunkinsdonuts.wordpress.com. If this all works out, I'm in the air right now on the way to New York City, so I hope everything goes well with the Olympics, and I'll be back in town in time for the show next week on the 18th. So I'll see you then. Thanks for listening, and this is Beach House with Silver Soul.
The Vancouver 2010 Cultural Olympiad, presented by Bell, is thrilled to present a concert event for the ages. Hal Wilner's Neil Young Project, February 18th and 19th at the Queen Elizabeth Theatre. An all-star tribute to Canadian rock legend Neil Young, featuring Lou Reed, Ron Sexsmith, Iron and Wine, Joan as policewoman, and members of Broken Social Scene. Hal Wilner's Neil Young Project, February 18th and 19th. Tickets at 1-800-TICKETS and tickets.com. For more info, visit vancouver2010.com/cultureolympiad.
Tuesday, February 23rd, beginning at sunset in Montreal, broadcasting live on your local campus and community radio station.
Sometimes we get that instant homelessness. We didn't expect to be homeless, and we find ourselves on the street because of an eviction or a notice.
Canada's largest talk show on poverty and homelessness.
We have a mayor who compared poor people to pigeons publicly and said that if you stop feeding them, they'll go away.
The 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, broadcasting February 23rd to 24th. A 14-hour live radio show from frozen street corners across Canada. Call in live, join the discussion.
Our demand from the federal government is $2 billion a year for social housing units across Canada. That'll just help us to start catching up to the 15 years that we've lost in building social housing in this country. It's really a glaring example of the negligence of the government.
Visit www.ckut.ca for more info.
The Homelessness Marathon will be broadcasting live from Vancouver on Tuesday, February 23rd at 8 p.m. as CITR 101.9 FM partners with CJSF 90.1 FM and Co-op 102.7 FM to bring you an hour of interviews and stories of how the 2010 Olympics are affecting homelessness in Vancouver. Visit CITR.ca for more information.
I'm Shani from Inepsi. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Show it, fetch it, broken.
Wait!